The Fight for the Soul of Miami Beach. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Miami Beach residents will vote in November to possibly change the last call from 5 a.m. to 2 a.m. It's an effort to change the city's reputation from a party destination to something more quiet. We'll hear from businesses and workers about their take on this proposal and the future of the city. Also,
it's different if you're writing sort of a lot of slapstick or physical comedy, but if you're writing something where the humor is in the narrative tone, the readers have to be on board. They have to be getting the joke and getting the point from the beginning.
Carl Hyacin is known for his sharp satire in Florida Living. His latest book, Squeeze Me, is the October Sundial Book Club title. All of that today on the show, after the news. The program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for joining us. Miami Beach is known for its neon lights, a beacon for those looking to party all night. The mayor and some residents are hoping to change that by banning booze after 2 a.m. Currently, businesses can sell alcohol until 5 a.m. Residents will decide if they want the earlier last call by voting on a referendum in November. Now, we've assembled a panel to discuss what the impacts of this earlier last call might be on the city's economy. First, I want to introduce Dr. Hank Fishkind. He's an economist and recently released a study projecting the impact of that proposal. The study, by the way, was paid for by the Miami Beach Chamber of Commerce. Also joining us is Mario Trejo. He is a bartender at Twist. Alex Ruiz is the owner of Salsa Mia at Mango's Tropical Cafe. And Brianna is a bartender at Mango's Tropical Cafe. We're not using her last name to protect her identity. We want to hear from you. How do you feel about this proposed 2 a.m. last call? Do you think it's a good idea? Are you trying to change? Do you want to see the city change its identity? Or do you think, hey, business as usual is good for the economy? 786-677-0767. That's the number to text your response. Again, 786-677-0767. You can always email us your thoughts, sundial@wlrnnews.org. So I want to turn to the folks on the panel here who work in Miami Beach and make a living and how this is going to affect them. Brianna, I want to start with you. And first, let's start with this, because we're just still kind of climbing our way out of the pandemic. And I've wondered, you know, how did the pandemic affect your livelihood and how's it going so far?
Hi. So actually, the pandemic had a great effect on our livelihood, because a lot of businesses were closed. So there was not a lot of places to work. And due to the circumstances, you know, we just really could not work. So now we get to finally recover, and the ban will really just, it would really not be a great idea, not only for businesses, but also for the city. Because in my personal experience, there was a lot more crime when businesses were closed and we had a curfew. There was a lot more activity out on the streets.
Yeah. And during the pandemic, there was a point where you really couldn't work, and then even as things were opening up, it was very slow to open up and you were very limited.
Yeah, it was very slow. And now finally that people are coming outside, it's a lot better now. So now people can come and travel, and now there's a lot more money going into the economy. So if people get deterred to come to Miami Beach, the tourism will go down, and that will affect us in a lot of ways more than just the bars.
Yeah. And by the way, congratulations, because you recently became a mom, right?
Yes. So that's who you hear in the background. She has her phone and she's interviewing too. So she's following me around on her phone. You'll hear her in the background.
And that's all right. Definitely. Alex, before I get to you, Mario, because you're a bartender at Twist, you know what, how did you get through it? How'd you get through the pandemic? What was it like?
Well, you know, the pandemic was tough on everybody, and I had a lot of support. I have great friends, and actually worked for Twist, which is a great, you know, organization. How everything, you know, just came together. There's one family. You know, we got a big great unit there. And through my friends and family, that's how we got through it. It's tough situation right now dealing with, you know, recovering from this pandemic. Like you said, there's so many people that I know at this time that still haven't recovered and are still struggling. Thank God I'm on that other side that I'm okay. But there's so many other people. And if this passes, it's going to be very dramatic on the city of Miami Beach, because it's known for fun in the sun, having drinks, going out, staying out late. And you don't necessarily need to just come out and, you know, want to drink in it. And you just want to go out and be out in this beautiful city that we call home, you know? So, it's going to be a big deal. Not just for us, but for the whole city of Miami Beach and those that are not even in the hospitality industry.
Everyone will be affected. It's just a few hours, but at the same time, and we're going to get to our economist here in a moment. We're going to find out what that few hours could mean. Alex Ruiz, again, owner of Salsa Mia in Mango's Tropical Cafe. Alex, everything's open. Are you seeing the same kind of business that you did before the pandemic?
Hi. First of all, thank you for having me. And let us speak our mind in what's actually happening. Well, Florida is open and, you know, we're actually really good. The fact that Florida is open and other states are closed, it has actually brought a lot more business to us after the pandemic. So in that area, we're good, but now we're extremely worried because having our businesses close at 2 a.m. is going to affect everyone drastically. And that's not going to solve the issues that we're having on South Beach. It's not going to solve the crime that we're witnessing on the streets. And any Miami Beach resident can tell you that the problem is not happening after 2 in the morning. The main issues are happening throughout the entire day. In reality, what we need is more police presence on the streets. We need Ocean Drive to open back up to traffic. And there are very few people that might actually believe that the 2 a.m. I fix the problem. And unfortunately, I do believe that there's politicians that are trying to follow their own personal agenda in order. And
again, it's a referendum that Miami Beach residents are going to vote on in November to change the last call from 5 a.m. to 2 a.m. And we want to hear from folks in South Florida, throughout South Florida, because, look, South Florida in general is seen as this destination to come party, especially for spring breakers. And, you know, what do you think about this idea of maybe it's changing the identity of South Florida, changing the identity of Miami Beach? Text in your response, 786-677-0767, or email us, sundial@wlrnnews.org. So, you know, we had Mayor Dan Gelber on a few times over the last year and a half, and he's pushing for this because he sees the future of Miami Beach as reaching out to a new, different kind of clientele. Let's take a listen to what he wants to do.
I don't want to diminish tattoo parlors and, you know, in phone stores, they have a place, but we have more of them than we have anything else right now, and that has to change too. So we want the entertainment district to become a cultural district, to become a historic Art Deco district, and reflect the rest of the city's ascendancy into this so that people can enjoy all of the city. Because right now, a lot of people won't go into that area because it feels unsafe. Certainly very late at night, it feels unsafe.
All right. And more in that conversation. This is from a conversation I had with him last year as the pandemic was raging through and a lot of places had to shut down anyway. But Brianna, let me start with you. Basically, one of the things he admitted to me was that he'd like to see more of, you know, the clientele from Art Basel than from spring break. What do you think about that? Do you think maybe it's time to change the type of people that we invite to Miami Beach?
So I totally agree with that. However, Mangles is one of the places that those tourists go to. So they appreciate the late hours. I'm sorry, excuse me.
That's okay.
Okay, so they appreciate the late hours. And so they have a place to go. If we close at 2 a.m., that will attract the crime. And so those tourists will, like, you know, they will go home or they will go to different areas.
So you, because that's one of the things that he's pushing for. He thinks that a lot of the crime and problems is happening after 2 a.m. But what I'm hearing from you is that's not the case.
That's not the case if the businesses stay open. So Mangles is a place where they can view the show. We have a show that goes on until we close. So the tourists can have a place to sit. We have, you know, areas where everybody can enjoy at different hours of the day. If we close places like Mangles at like an earlier hour, then we will kill the business and we have to close forever.
Mario, what about this idea? I mean, again, they're pushing like, hey, if we last call at 2 a.m., we won't have as many drunks on the streets. That's part of the idea.
Well, I agree absolutely 100% with you, Brianna. Definitely we get, I welcome Art Basel folks in all walks of different, you know, cultural aspects of it. When people are in our clubs, they are patronizing and they're having fun. They're going to release. They're not out there causing havoc and trouble. I mean, they're in the clubs. They're inside the bars to have a good time. So this nonsense of let's shut everything down at 2 a.m. is just the city of Miami Beach passing the buck. They're looking for a scapegoat. And we were founded on, like I said, fun and just that air, that feeling of partying and just being free. And this is totally going to just reverse all of that. Okay. Now, I understand the mayor wants to change the look and the dynamic of the city, but you don't need to go this route. This is not an issue of on the streets. This is an issue of getting their getting their police force in line and coming up with an effective plan.
All right. And Alex, because I want to go to our economist here in a second and ask about the impact of this. But Alex, again, I just want to, you know, verify, you know, understand here. The push is, the idea is the 2 a.m. last call will reduce crime because, you know, again, the idea is that people won't be drunk later. And so the hope is they'll just leave.
Well, I mean, that's not going to happen. Unfortunately, when people, and first of all, I agree 100% with what Brianna and Mario said. And let me do a little bit of a follow-up when it comes down to that. People come to Miami because of our culture, our music, our food, and that's what our venues provide. When you come into Mangles, we offer all sorts of Latin culture and music and food. And when our guests are inside, they're protected, they're being entertained, they're having a good time. We get people from all ages and people from all over the world that come in. Closing at 2 a.m. was going to cause more chaos.
How?
I was just looking at some of the pages that we have in Miami Beach. And you have people that end up partying on the beach and leaving our beaches trash with bottles and open containers and narcotics. So what's going to happen if our venues close at 2? You're not really closing us down at 2. You're closing us up at 11. People are not going to come after that. And if they do come, what's going to happen? They're going to end up consuming alcohol on the streets and narcotics, which we already seen them. And if you just take a nice walk on the beach, you're going to end up finding trash, bottles, cans. And that's actually what was happening while we were closed. While the entertainment district was closed during the pandemic, the crime got actually a lot worse. To tell me, let's try it, let's see what happens, because this was already tried. And when it happened, it was a complete failure.
So the push is again for the 2 a.m. because there's the belief that means that the people will stop drinking and they'll go somewhere, they'll leave. But you're saying, no, you do that, they're just going to go do it on the beach or somewhere else out on the streets.
During the pandemic, we were closed. We were actually one of the last venues to open.
Okay.
And
I want to go over now and let's talk about what is the impact? Because I said it's just 3 hours. From 2 a.m. to 5 a.m., it's just 3 hours. But what does that 3 hours mean? I want to turn over now to Dr. Hank Fishkind again, because he's an economist that worked on the report that showed what the impact would be. Dr. Fishkind, I appreciate your patience. So that 3 hours, what would it mean economically to the city?
Well, it would mean exactly what our other panelists have said. What they say rings true. What they say is now documented in the studies that we did. We did one in 2017 and one recently. I think what people need to understand is that there is a substantial amount of sales that occur, not only after two, but as Alex just explained, it will stop sales, as early as midnight. But what's important is not just the loss of the sales, it's the loss of the customers. As our panelists have clearly noted, there is a cadre of customers who enjoy partying late in our clubs, and we will lose those customers. So not only are they lost to the clubs, they're lost to the hotels and restaurants. So it has a magnified impact. Job loss, we estimate, will be more than 4,000. More than $225 million of sales lost each and every year.
Wait, say that one more time. How much?
4,000 job loss, more than $225 million of sales lost each and every year at the hotels, restaurants, and clubs.
And that's
So this is a bad idea. It's not going to solve the crime problems, which aren't in the clubs. And it comes at a particularly bad time for the city. The city itself has said its budget is structurally unbalanced.
And there are people.
So it exacerbates the city's problem.
And so, that's the effect on the businesses. What about, the residents, especially those who are like, yeah, I want this out. I'm tired of the noise. I'm tired of the mess. I want all of this out. How would it affect them?
Well, it would cause a substantial increase in their taxes, and it will erode their property values, certainly in the short run. I would merely point out, when Fort Lauderdale some 30 years ago decided it was done with spring break and pushed spring break out, it took more than 20 years for the real estate and business economy on Fort Lauderdale Beach to recover. So we're talking about very substantial potential economic harm for a long time.
Again, I'm talking with economist Dr. Hank Fishkind, and you also heard from Mario Trejo, a bartender at Twist. Alex Ruiz is the owner of Salsa Mia at Mango's Tropical Cafe, and Brianna is a bartender at Mango's Tropical Cafe. Talking about, the referendum that's up for vote for Miami Beach residents in November to change last call from 5 a.m. to 2 a.m. And we've been hearing from some of you. We heard from one of our listeners via our text club, Clive, a resident of Miami Beach. He says, quote, "Nothing good happens after 2 a.m. end quote. Share your thoughts. What do you think about this? Text us 786-677-0767 or email us sundial@wlrnnews.org, especially if you live in that area. Tell us what you see, what you experience, and do you think, is this the time to change that? And also, we'll talk. We're going to take a break here, and we're going to come back to this idea of changing, the image of Miami Beach. What does that mean, and would that actually work? Could economically, is that feasible? We'll keep that conversation going after this break, and again, we want to hear more from you. 786-677-0767. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Again, we're continuing this conversation about the identity of Miami Beach, because in November, Miami Beach residents are going to have a choice. They can change the city's last call time. Right now, it's 5 a.m., and the referendum would change it to 2 a.m. And the idea is, you know what? It will change the city's party reputation. It'll make it safer. That's the idea, but is that true? Well, we want to hear from you, your thoughts on this. You can text us 786-677-0767 or email us sundial@wlrnnews.org. By the way, you know, because we just heard about Fort Lauderdale trying to deal with its spring breakers. Is it true? If you lived in Fort Lauderdale, what did you see after all the changes? West Palm Beach, Key West, what do you think about this? Again, 786-677-0767. I want to go back to Dr. Hank Fishkind, economist who released a study projecting the impact of this proposal. He's saying it's hundreds of millions of dollars that will be lost. Thousands of jobs will be lost. Is that what we want at this time, considering we're still recovering from COVID? Dr. Fishkind, talking about this study, you authored a similar one back in 2017 during another fight over the sale of alcohol in the city. Is there anything different between this one and the 2017 study?
Yeah, the timing is worse now. The effects of are essentially the same, similar magnitudes, but given that we have an uneven and incomplete economic recovery and the city's budget woes, this is a particularly bad time for this kind of thing.
You know, we talk about what the residents are feeling and thinking, and, you know, anybody who doesn't know, I mean, there are residencies nearby, but, you know, there's also, you have that one strip of road where a lot of the partying goes on. Mario, you're a resident of Miami Beach. What do people say? How do you know, your neighbors and the people around you, what do they say about, you know, what Miami Beach is and what do they want?
Well, speaking with my neighbors, they love where they live. You know, when you come to Miami Beach, you know what you're getting. You know what you're coming here for. You know what everything about Miami Beach is. And these people, my neighbors, have been here 10, 15, 20 years, and they love it. They love to just come out, walk on the beach, interact with people and folks from all walks of life from around the world. You have those people that, yeah, you know, people that are getting older and retiring, those are probably the people that you're hearing, maybe that they're for the 2 a.m. Ban, you know, to do that. But this bottom line, Miami Beach is a party city, and it's known for that. From all around the world, people save their hard-earned money to come to Miami Beach because they know what they're getting. They know what experience they want. And how can you change that? How can you do that? It's just something that we're just shooting ourselves in the foot by doing this. The folks that I talk to, my friends, they're against it because they know they love every bit of it. My neighbor, she was a bartender at the Deuce for about 15 years, and she loves it. She loves Miami Beach the way it is. She doesn't want anything to change. So you're gonna have the naysayers and the people that want to change it, but the majority that I hear, they don't. It's not a problem for them.
Let's, you know, I want to go back to the conversation I had with the mayor again last year, and this is one of the comments that he had made about clubs and the club life on Miami Beach.
We cannot be for everybody. If, you know, if there are clubs that think that their business model is overselling tickets to promoted parties and giving these gigantic drinks to as many people as possible and just, you know, and turning people away and sending them into the streets, if that's your business model, then you ought to go somewhere else. There are places certainly that will embrace that. We're not going to.
Alex, is he talking to you? Is he talking about you?
I don't think he's directly talking to us. We're a Mangos. We don't really provide those huge drinks, which we're not a part of that. But let me follow up to something that Mario was saying. I want to follow up to the question that you gave him. I've been living in South Beach for the last 16 years, and Miami Beach, we provide everything. I'm a little bit of an early bird. I wake up, believe it or not, every morning around 7, 8 a.m. in the morning, and it's a beautiful place. throughout the entire day. Of course, so if you live in Miami Beach, you could have the best of both worlds. You get up in the morning, go to the beach, have your brunch, go to the gym, enjoy the museums that we have, the art galleries that we have. And at night, you could go out and, you know, have a good time and party. Now, I do tell you one thing, though. Every single person I know, they agree with me in the fact that if we close the entertainment district at 2 in the morning, all those folks, when they leave the clubs and the bars, they're going to wander around the neighborhoods, which we saw that. A lot of people took to the streets and the residential areas where never before in 16 years I ever saw it.
So you're, I'm hearing from you again, this the argument being that if we stay open, they'll have a place to be instead of just letting them out into the streets. Brianna, you know, and I want to come back to what Mario said. You can't change the image of the city. It's a party city. There have been cities that have changed their image in the past, but that's the effort. I don't know. What have you heard from folks? Do you think that that's possible or it would be a good idea or not?
Honestly, you cannot change the location. So Miami Beach is Miami Beach because of the beach, because of the scenery. It's a beautiful place to be. People from all over the world want to come to Miami Beach, regardless if businesses are open. Now, if it's safe, depends. Sorry, guys.
That's okay.
If it's safe, that depends on if businesses are still open. I'm from Chicago. A lot of my friends, they come here and they're going to come here regardless. And they ask me, where should we go? What should we do? They don't have anything to do. Then they're going to find things to do. Also, as a resident, a lot of my neighbors work in the service industry. So if we kill the service industry, we kill the residents. Nobody will be able to afford to live in the neighborhoods and we all move out. And I would also, it just would not be a good idea. Mm.
Dr. Fishkind, I wanted to, because again, the study paints this grim picture for the city economically, but the mayor did criticize it. According to the Miami Herald, he had said there was, you know, he points to a 2020 study paid by the city that showed that the entertainment district cost taxpayers $6 million a year with police and other city spending. So how do you account for that? Dr. Fishkind, do I have you there? All right. Looks like he dropped out, and I do apologize about that. All right. I'm going to finish with this because, again, it's something Mario said that was really interesting. And I'm going to ask each of you just briefly, if you could. Mario, start with you. You don't think that the image of the city can change. The idea that I've heard from some city leaders, like the mayor, is that, again, they want more of an Art Basel feel, more museums, more families, more family-friendly, and not the spring breakers. Mario, you think you can't change that? Or you, well, wouldn't want that?
First, okay, so let me start off with one. Right there, you hear that there's an agenda. They're trying to change the image of it for a reason. They're trying to say that it's all this crime and stuff that's going on. But they have to. Everybody listening or everybody that is intrigued by what's going on right now needs to understand that Miami Beach is Miami Beach for a reason. It was built on what it is right now. Now, I'm going to touch a lot of different topics right now because
I have to stop you there, but only because of time.
Okay,
and I do apologize. Okay. But so you're saying it is what it is, and that's for the reason it is. You can't change that or you destroy it. And I appreciate that, Alex. Briefly, is he right? You mean to tell me we can't change the city, we can't change the identity and just attract new kinds of tourists?
We don't have to change our identity or our culture. All we can do is improve it. Again, Miami has everything to offer, not just nightlife. But if we want to keep our nightlife going, we just need more safety. Our identity is fine. Our culture is fine. We do not need to change who we are, because we are the ones that created this economy and we're the ones that created Miami Beach. Miami Beach is not only a city where people come in and party. The same people that come in and party and have a good time with us, they're the same people that go to the museums during the day. They're the same people. They're the same visitors that are going to the spas. They're the same people going to the galleries, and they're the same people that consume early morning, afternoon, and night.
This is a fascinating debate, and it is about the future of the city and the identity of the city. And again, voters will have their say come November. I want to thank my guests. I apologize because of time, but I want to thank my guests here. We heard from Mario Trejo, bartender at Twist, Alex Ruiz, owner of Salsa Mia at Mango's Tropical Cafe, and Brianna, bartender at Mango's Tropical Cafe. Earlier, we heard from economist Dr. Hank Fishkind, and we've been hearing from our listeners from our text club. Leslie in Palmetto Bay says, quote, cutting off alcohol sales at 2 a.m. is a must-do idea. The well-being of the community means more than money. For too long, money has spoken louder than safety and mental health. The time to recognize that is long overdue. We're going to keep talking about this before that vote comes up, because we want to talk about the future of the city and the economy. And by the way, you can always join conversations via our text club. Just text to 786-677-0767. That's how you can take part in future conversations. It's really easy, and we'd love to have you. All right, let's change things up. Still to come, a conversation with this month's Sundial Book Club author, Carl Hiaasen. His newest book, Squeeze Me. It's a lot of fun, I promise. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. All right, so the story begins like this. It's at a wealthy gala in Palm Beach, and we have one of our characters, Catherine Kiki Sparling Pugh Fitzsimmons, a wealthy woman who goes missing. Meanwhile, a wildlife expert has to be called to that gala to deal with an unwanted guest, a massive python. And then something interesting about the snake, it has this big bulge in its belly. That's how the book Squeeze Me by Carl Hiaasen begins. We chose this novel for the October title of the Sundial Book Club, and you can find out more on our Facebook page. Just look up Sundial Book Club. We spoke with Carl last week about his writing process, the art of satire, and of course, commemorating this book to his late brother. You started writing this book, I think it was just a few months or some months after your brother Rob had died.
I didn't write anything for the first couple of months. And then I started the column up again, and I finally was able to sort of refocus and get going on the book.
What was it like getting back into writing, whether it was the column or writing this book?
You know, I mean, one of the things the newspaper business teaches you is there's no such thing as writer's block, because you have a deadline and I mean, you're expected to turn in X number of words by this time. So you're just conditioned to write through almost any kind of experience. But this in particular, losing Rob the way it happened, just felt like too much to try to deal with and be able to focus on the way you have to when you, so the first issue was the newspaper column, and you really do have to be focused and it was just difficult. And so the Herald was great about it, and they said, take as much time as you need. And then the books are different, a little different kind of muscle that you're exercising than the newspaper, especially a novel with where you have a lot of plot lines. And then secondarily, in my case, the books are supposed to be funny. You know, it's satire, so you're supposed to make people laugh. And that obviously was a chore for me at the time, at first, because nothing that had happened was in any way funny or humorous. And I didn't feel very funny or humorous. So it did take a while. And then once you get back into the rhythm of it, you know, you sort of get involved in the story and the characters themselves. And in this case, I don't want to say a political urgency to it, but there was a timeliness to it. I was trying to get the book done, at that point. There's the character, the presidential character in the book, who goes by the Secret Service name of Mastodon, I'm told resembles in some way the former president, and so at the time, you know, you want to be topical. So I was trying to get the book done, not knowing whether or not he would be reelected, and at the same time, then the pandemic hit. So I was writing, and I was able, because they kind of compressed the deadlines, I was able to go back and get a pandemic angle into the book, which you normally wouldn't do. There's normally quite a lag time between the time you finish a novel, it might be 9 months or more before it actually appears in print, you know, in hardcover form.
You dedicated this book to your brother. You got it done, and you know, you're back at it again. And I'm wondering, you know, how you remember him and how his loved ones remember him.
There's not a day that goes by, obviously, that I don't think about him. And even when I'm writing, you know, I miss our phone calls because we didn't see each other that much. He was living in the Baltimore area, and I, you know, for years and years, and I'm down here, but we talked, and I miss the sense of, you miss all of it. The sentencing, one of the reasons I just went back and sort of was eventually able just to dive into the writing again was because that's what he would have wanted. He would have been highly pissed off to think that I just quit, you know, and just stopped. So, and that helped me get this book done, Squeeze Me. I mean, I knew from the first page that I was going to dedicate it to him, obviously, and that was a highly motivating factor on days when I didn't feel like reading, or it was just the sadness was particularly heavy.
Well, let's talk about the book, because again, a long line of all the books that you've written and continues the Carl Hiaasen humor and satire. We start off with this wealthy socialite, Catherine Kiki Sparling Pugh Fitzsimmons. I always love the names, by the way, that you come up with. I'm wondering, you know, because so here we have this character, and she's at a Palm Beach gala at a ritzy, rich party. And did you get the idea? I think I'd read somewhere you got the idea because you had read the section of the paper that focuses on the glitzy Palm Beach life.
Well, no, I've been to just a couple of these events. For obvious reasons, I don't get invited much, nor do I seek an invitation. But I'd seen some of the, some of the cinematic possibilities just by attending them. And then, so while I was writing the book, I read the Palm Beach Daily News, which is what they call a shiny sheet. They used to call a shiny sheet because it was primarily focused on society happenings. And of course, during the season, there's a gala every other night at one mansion or one resort or another. And so, and they post pictures of everybody, you know, they cover it exhaustively because that community is not all, I mean, they are very generous, but they're also very interested in seeing themselves in a shiny sheet. So that was a sort of a daily inspiration, you know, and also to come up with, the other challenge was to come up with charitable events that already didn't exist for the purposes of fiction, because like all the main diseases are taken, all the primary ailments are taken. So I came up with the IBIS ball for irritable bowel syndrome. It seemed to me you could combine the natural, you know, the environmental element of the IBIS with the, as an acronym for irritable bowel syndrome. It's the big fundraiser, and that's what she was attending when what Kiki Pugh was attending when she mysteriously vanished. That's how the book opens. She disappears, and they find a shoe and a martini glass, I think, and half a tab of ecstasy that she had taken the other half.
Well, you get the sense of that Palm Beach glitz, no question. Kiki disappears early in the book, and then we meet the next character is Angela Armstrong, a wildlife control expert, called in to remove a python from the gala. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd read somewhere that when you started writing this, Angela was a man?
The first time I wrote, I think about the first five or six chapters, and Angie's character, and I like her tremendously, but they're wildlife removal experts, which, as you know, it's a business in Florida. If you've got a possum in your piano, you call up somebody and they come and catch the possum and take him out and let him go. And so it's a real business, but it's a business where mostly it's men. So I just started, because I had the python thing already going on in my head for the book, but I needed, okay, now who's going to come out and deal with this giant snake? So, but originally it was a man. I wrote several chapters and I just thought, God, this would be much cooler if it were a female character. There's no reason a female character, a woman couldn't do the same job. There's nothing, you know, you don't need to be a man to know how to handle these critters. So I changed it and went back and tried it that way. And I liked it much better.
And then, of course, as you mentioned, you have the President of the United States in your book, nicknamed Mastodon, First
That's
Lady
a Secret Service name,
the First Lady Secret Service nickname is Mockingbird, and they live at Casa. Well, they spend their time at Casa Bellicosa. When you're doing satire, I mean, you know, how much of it are you trying to mimic, or how much of it do you have to change?
Well, I mean, I think obviously to make it work, it has to be close to the mark. And the trick is to make it not just that, but, you know, kind of ratchet it up maybe a notch and a half in Trump's case, because you're trying to stay ahead of the real life headlines, which, you know, during his entire presidency and subsequently are so outrageous and bizarre that it's very difficult whether you're writing, you know, satire is in a novel or whether you're writing jokes for Stephen Colbert. It's hard to make things any funnier or more outrageous than what actually happens. So in this case, you're trying to make obviously you make the characters recognizable or at least hit a note that readers are familiar with. And the other trick is you want people to laugh, but you want them to laugh for the right reasons. And I've said this before, it's different if you're writing sort of a lot of slapstick or physical comedy, but if you're writing something where the humor is in the narrative tone, the readers have to be on board. They have to be getting the joke and getting the point from the beginning. And that's why, you know, I felt lucky all these years to have loyal readers, because they do get it. They're in on it. And so when you do talk to them, you find out they're laughing for the exact reason you wanted them to laugh. But it's tricky, you know, I mean, it's tricky. And in this particular, you know, election cycle and beyond, you know, there was such division and such rancor. And I wrote the book knowing I wasn't going to make any friends among Trump followers. But I've been writing a newspaper column for 40 odd years, and I never worried about whether I was going to piss somebody off or not. You can't do your job if you worry about that.
When you talk about writers who get Florida, you know, your name's going to pop up in any Google search right at the top. There are a few writers who get it. They understand Florida because they're from here. And a lot of writers come down here because they try. They really want to. What is it about Florida that so many people are so enamored with that idea, and also that they want to laugh at us?
Well, I mean, we deserve, honestly, to be laughed at. There's a reason that hashtag Florida Man is so popular. And it became, obviously, when Trump was president, it was emblematic. It was he was the ultimate kind of Florida Man for those years, and probably will be again. I don't know what it is. I think my theory is that almost everybody in the country, if you talk to them, when I travel, is they've got a connection to Florida. They've either got a grandmother who moved here, they've got cousins, they've all been to Disney World. They've got their own idea of what Florida is. And of course, it's in the headlines so much now. It's in every late night comics monologue. There's a Florida joke. What's going on right now with DeSantis and the pandemic? I mean, it's outrageous. And, you know, the idea of going after private businesses asking their employees to get a vaccine or wear a mask, the idea of punishing them is the antithesis of anything traditional Republicans would do. Pro-business Republicans and punish small business. They never do that. But now, you have people trying to mimic sort of Trump being tough. And so there is a fascination with what's going on in Florida. And, you know, then you have the exotic elements, the Python, you know, just the weird stories that come out of here. And I benefited from this. I'm not going to lie. I mean, the people all over the country seem to want to read about Florida. It is fascinating. And it is a very, very unusual state. But I will say also this, that we've been eclipsed in terms of, you know, we were regarded after sort of the Bush-Gore fiasco as like maybe the dumbest state in the country. But we don't have that title anymore. You've got Texas and Alabama and Mississippi and Arizona and places that where there's this, the general per capita stupid behavior is far exceeds what we have in Florida.
I do remember one of my favorite conversations was with somebody with the Southern Poverty Law Center. I think it was some years back about, you know, why Florida has so many hate groups. And the answer I thought needs to be in a novel is like, well, bad people like the beach too.
That's right. No, They do criminal. People always say, why is there so much crime? I said, well, if you're going to be a car thief, for example, would you rather be a car thief in Detroit in the wintertime or at Lauderdale by the sea? Just use your head.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you have this book that came out last year, and I'm wondering too, because you had a great string of younger reader books, mm-hmm. you know, that people love: Hoot, Scat, Chomp, Squirm. And I'm wondering, you know, when are you going to get back? When's the next one going to come out? You have a lot of fans waiting.
Well, I'm working on another kid's book right now, about three quarters of the way through. And this one's going to be set mostly down in Key West. Which is one of my favorite places, and so I'm on the last stretch of that. I'm not sure when it'll be out yet. I don't have the pub date or anything, but it's coming along, and it's been fun. Ever since Hoot came out, I just made a point of alternating. I do a book for the grown-ups, and then I'll do one for the kids, because the kids are just the most, they're just a terrific audience, and the letters you get and the feedback you get, they're just it's amazing. And it also gives you hope for the future when you get these kind of letters from smart kids who care about the right things, who care about being kind to one another, they care about the environment, what we're doing to the planet, and when they write about it very eloquently and with a lot of emotion when they send you these letters. And it could be about bullying, whatever. There's an aspect in the book you hear about it, and I really do think it helps sustain you, especially when you're as cynical as I am naturally. And after all this time in the newspaper business, there's no way to be a rosy optimist about what's happening with the human species. But when you do get these incredibly smart letters from kids who really do care, you think that maybe they can undo the damage, you know, my generation did.
Is there any kind of project that you have always dreamed of working on that, you know, you want to get to at some point?
You know, I haven't. I've been lucky enough, you know, I've worked on had some books, you know, that, and some projects in Hollywood going, and I never really wanted to. I've done some screenplay work years ago, and it wasn't, you're writing for a committee, and it wasn't nearly as much fun as writing a novel when it's just basically you and your editor. But sitting in front of a room pitching, you know, an idea and getting notes about the script from half a dozen people, and only half of those could write a postcard if their life depended on it. You know, I don't have the patience or temperament for it. I have the freedom to pretty much, if I wanted to, you know, if I want to pause and do a little nonfiction book like I did with Assume the Worst, the graduation speech, I can do that. And, you know, I can work out those little side hustles if I want to. And I think I've got my hands full just on the novels. I mean, Squeeze Me, because of, you know, having to write fast at the end because of the way the political situation was going, it was a little tiring. You know, I'm not getting any younger, and I felt it. I wish I was, you know, back when I was in my 30s, I could do it. I could put in a 10-hour day writing. I can't really do it anymore, but it's okay. I mean, I think you can still get better, and I just I feel very lucky to have come this far doing what I do.
You know, I think about your book Striptease turned into a film. You know, wonder what that process was like for you, and if somebody came along and said, "Hey, you know what? We want to make Squeeze Me into a movie." Is it, for a writer, is that something exciting?
Well, the book has already been optioned they want to do a, you know, one of these limited mini series on cable, which is good. I don't know how far along that one is. I know Bad Monkey, Apple TV and Warner Brothers are putting a series together that's going to start shooting next year at some point in South Florida, and I am excited about that because I've the producers had that option on that book for 5 or 6 years, and I know he's committed to being faithful to the story. And the appealing thing I've found is with these limited series, you can do so much more character development than you can in a 90-minute film. You have much more opportunities for plots, and it's much more conducive to the kind of novels I write, where you have subplots and people going off in different directions. And those are hard to condense to a 90-page movie script and still get the humor.
And that is author Carl Hyacin. Again, his latest book, Squeeze Me, is the October title for the Sundial Book Club. Go to Facebook, look up Sundial Book Club, ask to join. We'd love to hear what you think of the book. And just to mention, by the way, we're not going to have a title for November or December, but we're going to devote November to the Miami Book Fair and then December to our best book club conversations. And that's the program for this Monday, October 18th. By the way, we've been hearing from you on the conversation about the Last Call of Miami Beach, and we heard from Carolyn in Pompano Beach. She says, quote, as a hospitality vet of 20 years, I agree. This earlier booze ban is not going to solve crime. I grew up in South Florida. The nightlife sets us apart. Culturally, as a Latino, we eat dinner late, go out late. We enjoy the ability to have somewhere to go. Florida's filled with industry workers. The after-hours bars and clubs were a huge way to blow off steam after handling the public all day. Carolyn, thank you for sharing that with us. Coming up tomorrow on the program, a really deep dive into the opioid crisis with a story about a family who's lost a lot of members to the epidemic. Plus, we're going to learn about a state-level prescription drug database that's supposed to help authorities identify people who are at risk of misusing opioids, but the technology might actually be making the crisis worse. All of that coming up tomorrow on the show. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for listening. As always, stay safe, be good to each other. The program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute.
WLRN Public Media.